We're going to look at the story that we started with in Leviticus 24 as part of our scripture reading. It's a story about a young man who's the son of Shelomith. Shelomith had a son by a non-Israelite. It's interesting because usually we're told the names of the father. In this particular case, all we know is the name of the mother. In that story, we find that Shelomith's son basically takes more after probably his father than his mother. Because we're introduced in Leviticus 24, verse 10, that he basically got into a fight with an Israelite. And during that fight, he cursed and he blasphemed the name of God. And for that, he was initially jailed. What I find interesting is he was jailed because he blasphemed the name of God. It doesn't actually talk about him being jailed for his fighting. I suspect today people would look at it and say, well, people use foul language, especially when they get mad. And if you're in the middle of a fight, well, of course somebody curses. They would see that as justifiable or as normal. But for the Israelites, it presented a new problem because it was one of the Ten Commandments not to take God's name in vain. So they took it to Moses, who in turn asked God, who then God said, the sentence is death. You've got to understand this. Clearly, words matter. Cursing cannot be lightly dismissed. Now, if you can control your mouth, you can actually control a lot more. You can control your whole actions, your whole body. We're going to go to James chapter 3, and we're going to work through James 3 and see this. In James chapter 3, we're going to start with verse 2. James chapter 3, starting with verse 2. It says, for we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. It is difficult to keep your mouth under control. But if you are able to, notice what James says, you are able to keep the whole body under control. Just that little bit makes a difference. Now, it shouldn't be surprising that the small thing that we call our tongue affects our actions. In fact, in starting with verse 3, James chapter 3, and starting with verse 3, it says, now we put bits in the horses' mouths so they will obey us. We direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships, even though they're so great, are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. Just a small bit in a horse, just a piece of metal in a horse's mouth, can direct an entire horse. Small rudder on the end of a ship directs the whole ship, despite all the forces that are going on around it. The point that James is trying to make is, of course, if we can hold control of the tongue, we can control the entire body. In fact, an uncontrolled tongue then causes a great deal of damage. Starting with verse 5, so also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a force is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. That's strong statements there. We have, always in the news or commercials for the Forest Service. We got to watch those little flames. You just, somebody throws a match out the window or whatever. Huge acres of forest can be burned down. It's true with the tongue as well. Think about how many fights are started because of poorly chosen words. How many relationships are ruined. How a person's view of themselves is bruised just because of what somebody said. Take a look in Psalms for a moment. Hold your finger. We're going to come right back to James 3. But Psalms 140. Psalms 140, and starting with verse 3, it says, "They sharpen their tongues as a serpent. Poison of a viper is under their lips. Keep me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men who propose to trip my feet." People use their tongue as a weapon. And many times it hurts. And it's not just mean, hurtful words either. People also use the words in other ways that cause damage. For instance, in Proverbs chapter 7, Proverbs 7, starting with verse 4, we're warned of the seductress. Proverbs 7 verse 4 says, "Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your intimate friend, that they may keep you from an adulteress, from the foreigner who flatters with her words." Flattery can distract a person as that person plots their downfall. It's words. But words that cause damage. Words also can deceive and hide things. In Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29 and verse 5. "A man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps." You got to keep that in mind. When somebody flatters you and starts saying all sorts of nice things about you, when you're saying, "Why are they saying this to me?" Start looking for the trap. So it's not just the mean, hurtful things. I don't want you to think about it. The tongue can cause all sorts of damage in all sorts of ways. Can't tell you how many times I've been lied to. Sometimes I don't know until later. Sometimes I know when they're doing it. But it happens. People flatter you. People say mean things about you. They use the tongue as a weapon. And it causes damage. It can become a forest fire that's impossible, it seems, to put out. And it's not easy to control the tongue. Going back to James chapter 3, this time to verse 7, it says, "For every species of beast and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison." And James' point is not that the tongue can't be controlled. In fact, his whole point is that we ought to control our tongue. But don't ever think you have it tamed. I'd read this passage and I think about, these circuses where they got, the lions, the lion tamers out there, and they put their head in their mouth or whatever. The lion tamer has to constantly remind himself that lion is still a wild beast. You just never know when it's going to become uncontrolled. And James's point is it's easier to tame a lion than it is to tame our tongue. You can hold it under control and keep it where it belongs, but you just never know when it's going to break its bounds and cause damage when you really didn't intend to. Never assume that you mastered your tongue. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, look at verse 12. It says, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. And the point there is that just when you think you finally got yourself under control and, hey, I haven't done anything bad with my mouth in years, that's when you're in the greatest danger, because you stop watching. You stop monitoring yourself. And then it slips out. Continuing on in verse 9 of James chapter 3. Talking about the tongue, it says, with it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth comes both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. We can't start thinking that it's normal for a person to have his tongue out of control. We can't start thinking that profanity and cursing, lying, or anything like that is normal or acceptable. In fact, think about it. If I got a mixture of salt water and fresh water, can I get a glass of fresh water out of it? As soon as I mix the salt water in it, it's all salty. Can I get anything good out of a language that's filled with profanity? And the answer is no. It's all bad. And I think people understand it. Take a look at these quotes here. I found these several of these type of quotes. Violet Crawley is a duchess, and she said, vulgarity is no substitute for wit. If you got to use vulgarity, you got to use profanity to do jokes, it's not a joke. There's nothing humorous about it. Unless you think it's funny to see somebody being foul-mouthed. Profanity is the use of strong words by weak people, according to William J. Ward. You can't be interesting without profanity, and let's face it, you're not interesting. I refuse to read books that have profanity. Well, basically why I don't watch TV. Every once in a while, you know, have you seen this show? No. Well, why not? Profanity is one of the main reasons. If it's not on the show, it's on the commercials. And I even have my system set up with profanity blockers. It turns off the sound whenever there's profanity. I'd rather live my life without those things than be influenced by them. Strange thing is, you know what? I don't miss them. I haven't watched them in decades. But so many of us start thinking it's normal that somehow you can go ahead and get olives off of a fig plant. You can't. You can't change the nature of the beast. And so what we need to do is start guarding the door. In Psalms chapter 141, Psalms 141. And look at verse 3. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. So much damage can be done by my mouth. God, I need help. I need a guard stationed right by my mouth. Because if I'm not careful, as the psalmist also points out in Psalm 39, and look at verse 1. I said, I will guard my ways that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are in my presence. Just like we put muzzles on dogs that tend to be vicious. David says, I'm going to put a muzzle on my mouth because it has a tendency to slip when it shouldn't be. Especially when I'm in presence of really bad people. I need a guard there. I need a muzzle. I need to watch what I say. So I don't sin with my mouth. James, over in James chapter 1, points out something that has irked me for numerous years. James chapter 1 and verse 26, he says, if anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. I think a lot of Christians need to take that to heart. Because sometimes I hear profanity coming out of Christians' mouths. There's a lot of people, I understand there's people in the world that think themselves Christians. And they have no control over their mouth. At least one of the advantages that I have, like when I go teach at the college, I get to at least tell them I'm a preacher. That usually filters most of the stuff out. But there's so many people think that they are going to heaven, that they are religious. And they show by their very words they are not. It's vanity. It's just a pretense. We have to control what we say. Because God is going to judge us by our words. In fact, over in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12, and look at verse 36. Jesus says, but I tell you, every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. I want you to think about why every careless word? Why not just stick to the ones where I'm thinking about it? I'm being very careful about what I say. Because oftentimes what just slips out of our mouth when we're not thinking is actually more closely related to what our hearts are. We oftentimes slip out of our mouths what we really are inside when we're not thinking about what I'm about to say. And we are going to give an account for every single word. Not just the ones you carefully crafted and figured out exactly which ones you wanted to say. Even the ones you just let slip out and you say, oh, I shouldn't have said that. We're still going to be called into account for those things. So we need to make our words useful. Not careless, not hurtful, not pulling people down. We need to use our words to make people better. In Ephesians chapter 4, look at verse 29. It says, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear it. Everything coming out of my mouth ought to be a benefit to the people that are listening to it. In other words, when I speak, I need to think about what's good for the other person. Now, that's difficult when you're really mad at somebody. But that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to stop and think. Going back to Psalms, this time to Psalms 19. Psalms 19 and verse 14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. My prayer ought to be, may the things that come out of my mouth, God finds acceptable. And the things I think about, as well as being acceptable to God. Because you can control your words. Again, Psalms 17 this time, starting with verse 3. Psalms 17, starting with verse 3. It says, you have tried my heart, you have visited me by night, you have tested me, and you find nothing. I have purpose that my mouth will not transgress. As for the deeds of men, by word of your lips, I kept from the paths of the violent. My steps have held fast to your paths. My feet have not slipped. David was determined to do what was right. It wasn't just his actions. He talked about his words. He held guard over his mouth. And his words helped people out of sin, not causing them to sin. So we need to get rid of the filthy language out of our mouths. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 8. Colossians 3 verse 8 says, but now you also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abuse of speech from your mouth. All of that needs to go. Because we are children of God and we should speak like that. We are Christians and we should show the world how to live righteously. Our words then should be seasoned with grace. Take a look at Colossians 4 and verse 6. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you ought to respond to each person. Again, the idea is to think about what you're about to say. Think about what the other person needs. Put some grace into that. Give it a gift of the words of your mouth. Hope you'll think about these things this evening, Lord willing. I was going to answer a question that a couple kids asked me. Well, why are some words bad? So tonight we're going to cover that topic, if the Lord willing. But we need to think about those type of things. If there's anyone here, though, today who is not yet a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. We have that opportunity to change our lives, to change other people's lives as well. There's those of you who are children of God who would like to pray as their brother on behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song, those selected.